morning, good evening. My name is Tino Magnetta, and welcome to another episode of GT Radio. Tonight I have an extremely good friend of mine and a great, great guy. It's Bruce McClure, GM of Sac & Fox. How are you, Bruce?
Doing great, Tino. Thank you so much for having me on your talk show tonight.
Oh, our pleasure, our pleasure. Bruce, tell me a little bit. You got a lot of stuff going on up at the casino, and I know you guys have been working quite a while on this. Tell us a little bit about what's going on.
Well, the last couple of years we've been working, and I've been planning on building a new hotel for the property. The property's going on 23 years, and we're growing our database, and we're growing our business, and it's been a long time coming, and our wonderful tribal council is approved, and the tribal membership approved me this last summer to go ahead and move forward and work on a 60-room, four-story hotel here for the property. And we're really excited that this is finally going to happen, and it's really going to be a game changer for Sac & Fox. You know, our guests are just excited, and it'll be a great improvement to Sac & Fox Casino and our operations having this hotel.
So, what all are you doing? What is the extent of it?
Well, we're going to build off the northwest end of the casino, and it's really going to have a beautiful entrance. It'll be a nice portico share you can drive up to the hotel to check in. And we're going to go ahead, and we're not going to build a swimming pool in phase one. But what we're going to do is have some really nice water features, some four big fire pits, a big jacuzzi, hot tub out there for the guests to really enjoy. And it'll be four stories, a beautiful gable roof, and the conceptual design is just stunning. And it's something that we've needed for a long time, and it's been a lot of hard work, and the vision is finally coming to light.
That's great. Now, I know you guys have been working on this a while. What made it now the appropriate time to do this?
Well, like I said earlier, it's we're growing the business. We've increased our database, and it's really listening to our casino guests what they really would like. You know, we're a day tripper casino. We're 45 miles north on Highway 75, north of Topeka, Kansas, and then we're about 2 hours from Omaha, Nebraska, and we get a lot of our casino guests really come from the Topeka, Kansas City, and Omaha, and it makes it a long drive when they're here for 4 or 5 hours and have to turn around and head back. So having the hotel is definitely going to increase our business, and it'll really help our guests as well, because they want to spend the night. And having them here in the hotel is going to increase revenues and just be a lot easier for everybody. But we're looking forward to that.
Bruce, tell me a little bit about your upbringing, where you're from, and what your dad did, because that influenced you quite a bit.
Well, thank you, Tino. Well, I grew up in Lake Tahoe. And I was raised by a stepfather. His name was Al Bonacorsi, and he's really kind of my mentor, because he was in the hospitality, gaming, entertainment business when I was a young boy growing up there at the lake. And he ended up having two roles for 25 years, and definitely was a role model. Taught me the work ethics, and hard work pays off. And, he was the chief engineer for Del Webb Sahara Tahoe for 25 years, as well as being the entertainment director for those 25 years. So he wore two hats, and that was unusual back in those days. So he really had a big role in my upbringing. And it was really, really nice is that I got to work for my father at the age of 16, and that was back in 1971. He told me, as long as my grades were good — I was a sophomore at the South Tahoe High School — he says, as long as your grades are good, you keep your mouth shut, you don't blab what you hear and see, He gave me a shot at being a part-time stagehand, working weekends and school holidays and summer vacations all the way through into my college years. And back in 1971, I was able to work for him and learn so much about the entertainment business. And my job was a pager. I used to page the microphone cords for the entertainers in the High Sierra Theater, which was, I look back now, as one of the best jobs I ever had. It was very challenging.
It's amazing. And tell me a little bit about your dad and what he did and what he was like.
Well, he was, became my dad when I was about 7 years old, and he took me in as his own, and he taught me everything about working hard and good ethics and being transparent and just being a good person. But like I said, he was quite a guy, and he passed on about 10 years ago, and he had a great career with Del Webb. And it's kind of funny, as he, when I was 8 years old, he got hired on at the to move up to Lake Tahoe. We were living down in Stockton, California, and he got offered to be the consultant engineer to build the Sahara Tahoe, finish the Sahara Tahoe, and build the High Sierra Theater, as well as the Annex Hotel, which was another tower. So he came up, and within 2 years, he finished up the whole property, got the job done on time. And Del Webb was so impressed with him that back in 1965-66, when he finished up the complete package at the Sahara Tahoe, that he offered him to go down to Phoenix and build retirement homes on golf courses. And, of course, he had to run that by my mom. And, of course, she said no to that idea, that she wanted to raise her three children up there in South Lake Tahoe. So we ended up staying there. My poor dad had to tell Del Webb no to the job offer. So about 3 days later, Del Webb calls Al back, my stepfather, and offered him the position of being the chief engineer, since he built the place, and as well as being the entertainment director. And he had no experience booking entertainment. And, of course, he got some great resources to help him do that, and he was very successful. And was really, a lot of fun working for him, because he was great with people. He was fair and, really a great manager of people. And I learned a lot of that from him. So that did help me with my career. But, Tino, one of the great takeaways during my young career before I got into the casino business is that I got to work 98 Elvis Presley shows paging Elvis's microphone cord. And a pager is paging the microphone cord behind the main curtain, and that was before the cordless mic. So that was a nerve-wracking job.
Wow.
Because you could pull that microphone out of their hand. And, we did two shows a night, and I worked with hundreds of entertainers. So, learning that part of the hospitality entertainment is really, helped me in my whole career, and I've always been fond of the entertainment part of the business, and it's been a great road.
Wow, that's amazing. That's good stuff. So, tell us a little bit about the first. I know you have a great story of one of your first jobs that you had an experience, because your dad was juiced in, right? So he got you a job as a lifeguard, right? Once.
Right. Well, after the stagehand days, I decided I wanted to try something different. So, ended up getting a job, for the summer. I was 20 years old. This is back in 1975. So I transferred from the Sahara Tahoe down to the Sahara Las Vegas. And, of course, there was a gentleman named Bill Dougal. He was the president of the Del Webb Corporation, and he lived on site. He and his wife, they lived on the tower, the shorter building. There's two, the large tower and then the second tower. So he lived on the top. So he invited me down for the summer to get a job as a lifeguard. So I had to get certified, and it was a lot of fun. And, you know, of course, I was getting ready to go back to college, too. So I transferred down back in 75 and, you know, worked the whole summer and really enjoyed it. Got my senior life-saving card. And so it was 4th of July weekend. And, you know, one of the busiest and, of course, hottest time of the, you know, time of the summer down in Las Vegas, 114, 117 degrees, sitting on that high chair, watching that, you know, giant-sized, Olympic-sized pool at the Sahara, Las Vegas. It ended up, I worked with a couple of, you know, most of the lifeguards, all their, you know, their fathers, and, you know, they were juiced in, just, you know, and, you know, when I say juiced in, that they had connections there in the casino, and they were, you know, the boss's kids are young guys. So, you know, I kept my mouth shut just because I was taught to do that, you know, from my father and, of course, and Mr. Dougal at the time. So no one knew who my juice was. But that 4th of July weekend, it ended up that there was a very attractive young lady that was, you know, our age and, you know, early 20s. And she flirted with all of us. And it ended up that the comedian who was in the main Congo showroom, and he was there as a resident entertainer, and that was Buddy Hackett. And so, you know, knew him as a, you know, from TV, and it was, you know, his son was out working in the pool as well as a lifeguard. Ended up, long story short, that Sandy asked her out for a date, and ended up that she accepted. And then later that day, in the evening before we got off, she walked up to me, this young gal, and asked me why I didn't ask her out. And I said, well, I heard you're going out with Sandy Hackett. And so anyway, she said, I broke the date. I don't want to go out with him. So it ended up that I go and, you know, take her out for an evening. And the Dougals at the time took us to the House of Lords. We had a wonderful dinner. And very nice lady. Her dad was a high roller there, comped in for a week at the Sahara. And I didn't know that at the time, but then we found out. So anyway, long story short, that evening when I went up to pick her up at the hotel, I had to meet her parents, and even the grandmother was there. And, you know, they liked me, and I said, I'd have your daughter back by midnight. We went to a couple places after dinner and ended up, got her back in time. Well, the following day, a lot of the people didn't realize that I lived that whole summer on that tower with the Dougals, and I was definitely juiced in as a lifeguard, but never told anybody. So as I was having breakfast that morning with Mr. Dougal and his wife, it ended up that I go down to the swimming pool to go to report at, by 10 o'clock in the morning for work. The pool manager pulled me aside and says, Bruce, I don't know what you've done, but he goes, I have to let you go. And I said, oh, I said, what did I do? And he said, well, he said, you seem to upset Buddy Hackett, something to do with his son. And he's having you, he called the hotel director, and they're terminating you. I was shocked. I didn't know what to say. So I went through the process of going through the going to HR and get my final check. And then I left, and then I, you know, I had a key to get into the tower. I went back up, and, you know, when I got up to the hotel room, the penthouse suite, Mr. Dougal says, what are you doing back, you know, from work so soon? I said, I just got fired. And he says, fired? Who fired you? And I told him who fired me. And he asked me why. And then when I told him that, you know, Buddy Hackett, you know, sent a directive down to have me fired for embarrassing his son. And of course, no one knew that I was, you know, had a relationship or, you know, with Mr. Dougal. So Mr. Dougal picks up the phone, calls the hotel director and said, did you just fire this Bruce McClure? And of course, the hotel director says, yes. He says, Buddy Hackett asked us to do that. So we did it out of courtesy. Something about embarrassing his son about some date or something that got broken. So Mr. Dougal told him, well, Bruce McClure is in my room. He lives here with the hotel, and it just shocked everybody. And then Bill Dougal picked up the phone, called Buddy Hackett, and woke him up. It was in, because he does two shows a night, and let him know that he just fired his God's son, and which he wasn't my godfather, but he just said that. Ended up that I got my job back, and I went back down to the pool like it never happened. I got a few apologies from management. And they all said, why didn't you tell me? And I told them that I was, that they didn't need to know that. So anyway, that's my story. I hope I didn't embarrass myself by telling that story. But I remember telling you years ago that, so you brought it up.
That's a great story. I love that story. That's a great story. So, Bruce, tell us a little bit about your career and how you fell in love with the business and, because I know you're passionate about what you do. Tell us a little bit about your trajectory and how it all started.
Yeah, well, when I turned 21 in 1971, there was a great role model that I just looked up to. His name was Paul Cyphus, and he was a Las Vegas casino manager that came up to Lake Tahoe. And he told me, as soon as you turn 21, Bruce, he said, I want to teach you how to deal. We're going to groom you for a great career. He says, you're definitely a people person. And, he saw a lot of things in me that I didn't see when you're at 21 years old. But so anyway, I started in 1976 at the Sahara Tahoe as a blackjack dealer, roulette. Broken on craps, and then I ended up, dealing high limit baccarat on the high limit baccarat pit there at the Sahara Tahoe, and was there for just under 8 years, and really enjoyed working at the Sahara. Gave me my foundation, as what I know today. Worked for some great managers in table games and the hotel operation and slots, and I really. They taught me a lot. I worked my way up to a floor supervisor by the time I was 23, and by 1980 I was 25. I became the youngest pit manager or pit boss at that time at the Sahara Tahoe, and really enjoyed what I did. Really working with our guests and in the high limit environment, and it ended up that I got picked. For Norwegian Cruise Lines at age 28 as the casino general manager on the world's largest cruise ship called the SS Norway. So I left on wonderful terms at the Sahara to take that job. And the Del Webb was the Sahara Tahoe management was happy that I did that because it was going to help elevate my career. But I've been in the business now this year, this coming April, it's going to be 44 years in casino operations, and
wow,
I just turned
amazing.
65, and I feel like it's been a great great run, and I've enjoyed every year that I've been in this business.
That's amazing, just amazing. So, what are some of the things that you love about it?
Well, I'm passionate about the business. It's ever changing. I know that trying to keep up with the technology side of this business has been it gets challenging sometimes because things change so much just in a lot of aspects. But I think that the most important thing that I really enjoy about this is meeting new people. Working with the staff and working in a team environment. And, I've worked for several, really great companies over the years. I was with Harrah's for about, 3 years when we opened up Harrah's New Orleans in 99. I was on the table game management team. And that was exciting. Anytime you open up a brand new property, and that was a large casino with, thousands of employees. I think we had close to 4,000 employees at Harrah's at that time. And, this has been my life, and I've, if I was to have to do it all over again, I would pick the same career, I'd do a few things different. You know, you learn from different managers and styles of management and companies, and you try to incorporate all the good. And sometimes you make great decisions, and sometimes you make poor decisions. And you know, that's that learning curve. It's challenging. This business has been very challenging for me, but it's been very rewarding too. And like I said, I wouldn't change it for anything. I'd do it again.
Tell us a little bit about some of the jobs that you've had. Now, what was your first real after the cruise lines? What was your first like land-based job?
After the cruise ships, I went to work in table games management on the opening team for the Isle of Capri in Vicksburg, Mississippi, back in '93, mm-hmm. and also worked as a table games manager, shift manager for Ameristar in Vicksburg. So I was that was the third river boat to open up, and it was a much larger facility and a lot of fun to work for. And going to work for Harrah's New Orleans as the table games manager in the Salon Privé. I was there for about 3 years, and then I jumped from there and got a great opportunity and went to work back in 2003 from New Orleans to Santa Ynez in California, just north of Santa Barbara. Went to work as the manager on duty and then worked my way up to executive director of player development and casino services. And I was there for nearly 5 years, a great opportunity there, and it also helped me move forward. And then I was recruited to Desert Diamond Casino Hotel and Casino in Tucson, and that was their new hotel casino they just built. So I was picked as their first general manager, and I worked for them for about 3 years. Wonderful tribe to work for, and CEO and COO. And then I got recruited to leave there to go to Morongo, and I was there for nearly about just over 4 years as the executive director of casino operations. And back at Desert Diamond, I was their GM and then executive director of casino operations at Morongo. And now I'm out here at Sac and Fox Casino as the GM and working hard to build this brand new hotel and expand the property. And it's exciting times. We're really excited out here. And so I plan on working another 8 to 10 years, Tino, as much as that sounds crazy. I'm just, my personality, like working around people, and I just don't want to give that up, not just yet. And it's not time to go fishing yet.
Yeah, exactly. What are some of the things that that you find challenging in our business?
Well, like I said earlier, I think some of the challenges, one of the biggest challenges I think that, you know, we probably all have out there as general managers, you know, directors and managers is really engaging the new workforce. I really believe that it is a challenge, and it's motivating the younger generation to get them wrapped around the business needs and the goals. And I know that's one of the toughest things I'm having right now as the general manager at Sac and Fox is just retaining staff. You know, a lot of the new generation, the casino industry is not that inviting for them. They're looking at other types of work. And it's not like it was, 30, 40 years ago when we all started out. And I think that's one of the challenges I'm having. And that's just, keeping up with the technology side, database analytics to, just all across the board. There's a big change, the new slot machines and all the different types of systems. And so it's really staying on top of all of them.
Great. Now, you have always been a showman. I know that you're very into the entertainment part of it and engaging the people. Talk to us about that connection and that grassroots customer service. How important is that, and how do you achieve that?
Yeah, I learned a long time ago, you know, you treat people the way that you want to be treated. And, you know, I'm a type of general manager that, you know, I hate being in my office all the time, you know, bogged down with meetings and, you know, the agendas. You know, all that has to be done as part of the business of being the general manager. But I'll tell you, I really enjoy hands-on, being out on the casino floor, shaking hands with our guests, our casino guests, and our staff, and you know here at the Sac and Fox and all the other casinos I've worked for. I've always been that out on the floor, kind of that, you know, GM that's out there meeting and talking, and it's really good that they see you, and that's my style of being a general manager. And the entertainment part, you know, I learned so many years ago, but as silly as it sounds, I was able to, I think I've mentioned this in the past, you know, a few years ago to you, that I created a supper club when I was at the Shoemash, and then it went over to Morongo. But that supper club was invited VIPs, which everybody does a VIP event, but I took it to a different level. And so I would challenge, I would, you know, put out the directive to the player development team. We're inviting 800 of our best guests, casino guests, based on their rate of play, theoretical, all of that. And we would fill up the hotel. I would take all 310 rooms. You couldn't get a hotel room at rack rate. They were all comped. And I turned the supper club into something that was so unique that it took off. And I remember, you know, the first time I presented it, I had to go before our tribal council at that time and explain what the supper club was all about, you know, bringing our best players in, you know, and of course, you know, having the best guest out there, you know, they wanted to know what the return on investment was. And I had to stick my neck out because I was spending $150,000 on that very first supper club back in 2010. And why I was taking all the hotel rooms, well, it was an invite only. I explained what was going to happen. I told them I could guarantee a 2-to-1 ROI. Well, I knocked it out of the park. And after that, they allowed me to do 52 total in those 4 years, and that was 15 a year at about $2 million budget for the supper club. And what I did is I hired the entertainment, and then we invited the amount of guests that were our best spenders. We rotated the database with the hosts, so it wasn't the same people coming all the time. And the formula was such a great success. But here was a spin on it. Instead of just, you know, having a nice supper, a dinner in the showroom with steak and lobster, I had a green screen with the photographer. We made it a theme. Each supper club had a different theme. And after about 10 supper clubs, they kind of got, you know, redundant. So I decided to dress up in costumes. I know this sounds really corny for a casino executive, but the guest really loved it. And, you know, I had Charo there one night doing a show at the supper club, and I dressed up in a banana costume, and it was hilarious. It was embarrassing, but everybody wanted a picture with me on the green screen, and I always emceed the supper club from beginning to the end, and the entertainment was in the middle during their, you know, after dinner. And so we had a lot of fun with that, and it was corny, but all the guests that experienced that said they've never seen anything like that ever in their, you know, at any casino, and we had a lot of fun with that.
Yeah, that's I know you really enjoy that. That also stems from a lot of your exposure to the entertainment aspect of everything, right? All that exposure you had for years.
Sure. You know, even as a general manager here at the casino, and even as casino operations where I was at Morongo, I booked all the entertainer. I was over the entertainment department. I was over slots and table games, the directors, player development, and F&B, and bingo. So I wore a lot of hats just as that in that position. And, you know, I took a little bit part of the marketing, which is kind of outside of the box. And it worked for that management style at that time. And so I know what the players like, you know, and, you know, one of the things that, you know, people ask me, what type of players do you look for? Well, I catered a lot to the baby boomers. So I brought in those type of entertainers that would bring out our better players that have the money to play. And they really had a good time with that, that whole concept of that type of entertainment. So,
yeah,
I think
really,
that's it.
People really love that. What are the most important qualities to be a GM?
Wow. That's a great question, Tino. I think being a good GM, I've learned, you know, over the years, I mean, you know, through trial and error and, you know, it really is, you know, a good GM is, you know, you have to listen to your staff. Listening to them is, you know, it really offers insight on how you can run the property better. A lot of times you get some great ideas from your staff because a lot of times management's upstairs in the offices and they're directing down to the front line, you know, how they want certain things done or promotions to everything that's related to our guests. And a lot of times, you know, listening to the staff, they can recommend, they can tell you what the customer likes because they're down on the front line dealing with our casino guests. So I've learned that's an area. Another area is sharing your knowledge as a general manager. Teaching is a part of our job, and sharing what you know we know to the staff helps foster a sense of empowerment in the casino operations. And it makes the job easier because you know equipping the staff and your team with knowledge and skills and that they can use to perform the job without constant assistance from you. I think that's one of the challenging areas. And you know, motivating people. I really feel that you know, motivation is a big factor as part of being a GM. You know, we need to be the biggest cheerleader out there on the casino floor across the property. You know, when they're working at their best, you know, make them realize that they're part of something bigger than themselves and that they are essential in achieving the casino goals and revenues. And another area is welcome criticism. Gosh, I think that's another area that it's really hard for a lot of people is, you know, nobody's perfect, and even the general manager, I think it's really important that instead of being defensive, you know, is kind of take a step back and take criticism as a stepping stone, you know, to get better at your job. There's a lot of areas. Yeah, and, you know, I think, you know, giving credit where credit is due. I, you know, as a general manager, director managers, it's important that, you know, that it's a team environment. And a lot of times, you know, nobody wants to hear that the, you know, I did this, the manager, you know, the general manager, you know, a lot of times those ideas come from the directors, managers, supervisors, front line, and you should give credit where credit's due. And so, you know, kind of, you know, expanding on all of that, it's very challenging being a general manager. You know, it's you're responsible for, you know, everything that happens across the property, and you know, you're held accountable, and you know, good and bad. And it's really just great communication.
Yeah.
I think that's, you know, those are some of the top keys, takeaways. That was a good question.
Yeah. Tell me, where do you think we are in the business right now?
Oh, where we're at in the business. Well, you know, that's another great question, Tino. Wow. Well, I've been in this business, like I said, the operations for 44 years. I've seen so much change. The internet gaming to sports betting, all of that, you know, it's not in our jurisdiction, you know, in Kansas. So I really don't have a lot of expertise advice in that area, but you know, I'm trying to read up as much as I can. You know, it hasn't passed in, you know, it's not part of our compact, but you know, just moving forward, it's a new generation of people coming in. The baby boomers have had a long run for a long time, you know, in the gaming business, and you know, they've been our best spenders, and you know, they learned from their parents, you know, that went to Las Vegas in the old days, even before Atlantic City. Yeah, the future is really, you know, I don't have a crystal ball, but I just see the core of gaming is still going to be slot machines. You know, the table games have seen a decrease in play in certain jurisdictions. And, you know, we just opened up bingo this last April 7th of 2019. So I'm looking for new guests, new casino guests to come in, and that's been helping us. You know, we have a 240-seat state-of-the-art bingo operation. And wow. So constantly looking for new customers of value and, you know, and getting just more people here. So I think the future is just really knowing who your guests are, using, you know, the tools that are at our disposal and the database to attract certain players. But I really don't know the future of, you know, of the direction we're going to go in. But I see it just, you know, moving slowly, and we're in that direction right now of increasing our business.
What do you think? Do you think this growth and this expansion and this almost like a renaissance we're having, you think that's sustainable?
Yeah, you know, I know there's a lot of saturation out there. I mean, we're about 90 to 100 miles from the Kansas City market. There's four Native American properties within a 35-mile radius. We're the second largest, and we're the only Native American casino, the Sac and Fox Casino, that's on a major highway. So building this hotel is definitely going to draw new players, and you know, I also see it helping our table game operation. It'll keep our loyal players that are, you know, on our top three tiers, where, you know, they can get compliment, they can self comp themselves or discretionary comps through player development and you know, casino rates. So, you know, it's really a no-brainer that what the hotel is going to bring to the property. You know, that's our future right now, is really the hotel, and our bingo operation just opened up less than a year ago. You know, we do a lot of entertainment since I've gotten here in the last few years. I've built a nice showroom and just really enhancing the property and, you know, bringing it back to a new look. And, you know, that's what our guests are really liking, because we're known for great food, great customer service, and that's what we're building our reputation on, is customer service. We're able to give our guests better service than our competitors because of our size. You know, we have about 700 slots, 10 tables, a nice lodge, buffet, and sit-down restaurant, steaks, the lobster, and then a 24-hour cafe, which I was able to build a few years back. And so it's really, we're improving our guest service experience, and we know everybody that comes in the front door. I really believe in staying up there by the Winners Club as they come in, and I welcome everybody on Friday and Saturday nights, and everybody sees me, and that's really how we operate here, is that we're a big family, and we're becoming very successful, too. We've had a lot of growth this last 2 years, especially, where we've exceeded budget, and that also helped convince Tribal Council and our membership to go ahead and on this hotel expansion.
That's great. It's great, great. It's amazing. What's your advice for the young people coming out through the ranks?
Another great question. Well, you know, coming up through the long way, from a blackjack dealer to a general manager, and I've been a general manager over four properties now in the last 14 years or 15 years in Native American casinos, and besides 12 years on cruise ships, but land base. I'd say my advice is take your time. You know, a lot of people want to fast track into that upper position to get to the top. You know, I took it the long, slow way, which I'm very happy I did, and I had some great opportunities. You know, you know, a lot of times you go too fast, you get set up for, you know, for failures, and you can make a mistake that can, you know, cost the company a lot of money and your reputation and revenues. You know, I really feel that, you know, being, you know, taking your time learning at a rate that's that works for you and not going too fast and being too pushy. And then my advice to a lot of people is I've seen a lot of great general managers and, you know, executives and directors and managers fail when they, you know, there's an ego involved and it's all about them. And, you know, it takes time to develop into a very good, well-rounded casino executive. You know, it's good to, you know, to roll up your sleeves and learn those other positions so you have that experience and knowledge when things go wrong and go right, that, you know, that you understand those positions and just, you know, fast-tracking to the top to be that that top spot. So that's my advice over my 44 years. You know, I've always been a, you know, very easygoing, but, you know, I get the job done. I understand. I have a lot of confidence. You know, nobody wants to be micromanaged, and I work better in an environment where that, you know, and that's that team building where, you know, you're not micromanaging people, and you let them, you know, you delegate and you give them the respect and the, you know, and the room to move as those managers moving up with the right direction. And so that's my advice, Tino. That was a great question. I hope I answered that okay.
Oh, no, that was fantastic. I mean, you know, how about mentors? What do you think about mentors?
Well, I think it's very important. I've been a mentor to several, you know, directors and managers over my career as a general manager, and even had one of an assistant when I resigned in a GM spot ended up becoming the general manager of that property, and it was nice. It's nice. I've kept in touch with that, you know, that person for a long time, and they've done very well. And I've mentored a few people, and just like I had mentors back in my early career, and even you know, as a, you know, as the last few years that there's people that I look up to, and, you know, there's a lot of people I can call if I run against something that I'm not sure about and get some advice. And so it's nice to have that, you know, those type of people in your life. So, definitely a mentor. So definitely believe in that mentorship.
That's great. Should we take some calls?
Sure.
Hello, this is Tino Magnetta. Do you have a question for Bruce?
Aloha, Tino. Aloha, Bruce. Michael Kaahanui calling in. How you guys doing tonight?
Good, buddy.
Wow. Hey, Michael, how are you?
Good. How you doing, Bruce? Sounds like everything's going well for you right now.
Yeah, having a great time. I'm still enjoying it, Michael. Very much so. Great to hear your voice. It's been a while.
It has. You know what? Yeah, every time I think, you know, man, I'm doing it for 25 years, here comes a guy like Bruce. I've been doing it for 44. I always feel, you know, like it's never enough time in the business. But to your point, you're always constantly learning. So, you know, you got a great story with, you know, kind of the evolution of coming up and learning the business from the ground up. And, you know, Tino did a good spot about asking about mentors and creating that mentorship. But you've been in tribal gaming now for some time. So, you know, what's changed from your perspective where, you know, as an operator from corporate into tribal gaming, and do you have a preference? Why do you have that preference, I should say?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I went from the corporate, you know, world, from, you know, the land-based casinos, you know, I'll say Harrah's, and you know, the transition, the difference between the two, Michael, is that in the tribal sector, what I've learned is that, you know, a lot of them are startups. They've, you know, they desperately need great directors and managers. And what's nice is that in the tribal environment, you know, you're heard more, you feel more part of the team. And of course, it's a smaller operation too than a big corporation with 20 to 50 casinos in, you know, in one company. But I that aspect of it has always appealed to me, and I've enjoyed that. And you know, working for some great tribes out there, you know, the California tribes, and then, you know, out here in Kansas for the Sac and Fox Nation has been rewarding. It's nice. You work with the senior management team, you know, as a team, and then you also get to work with the tribal leadership, you know, your tribal council or your board of directors. And it's nice when, you know, you're working as a group, as a team, and everybody has a set goal. And it's a lot easier with the smaller Native American casinos versus the big corporations. In the big corporations, you, after a while, you feel like you're just a number and your voice is never heard. And I hear that from a lot of people that have transitioned from the corporate casinos to a tribal. But I do well in both. I shouldn't say that one's better than the other. It's just that the tribal casinos, when you're there on a ground floor, it's a startup, or it's evolving from a sprung structure to a beautiful four diamond resort. That we saw that at Shumash Casino Resort where I was at, and we were in a big tent. And today, if you look at that property, it's a very beautiful property. It's a four diamond, and great leadership, great tribal vision from their leadership. And it was really, you feel part of that more so than you do in the big corporate world. So I think that's kind of the difference for me.
That's fantastic. I myself been very fortunate to work with three tribes over my career, and all of them, you know, always taught me a little something, and were fantastic to work with. The other thing that we talked about, or you talked about a little bit, was mentorship. And I guess if I were to expound on that a little bit, how do you identify talent now so that you can retain it and continue to develop it? What kind of programs do you either put in place, or how do you try to nurture the talent that you have at your casino?
Well, that's a great question, because my first exposure was back in the property I just spoke about at the Shumash. Is our COO developed a program when I was executive director of player development and casino services. We picked our top performers as anywhere from supervisor on up to a manager's position, but mainly supervisor. And what we did is that, you know, and the majority, we would take five at a time up to six. And what was great is that, you know, we had really didn't have a lot of Native American employees. It was a very low percentage based on, the 1,500 employees that we had. But we looked at the qualities that they had, and we put them in a two-year program. This was kind of a beta site for us. I mean, it was our first time ever doing this. And we set it up through human resources. We took them out of their departments, and we put them in this two-year program. And they had, part of their, curriculum was that they had to work in every department. So if you were in the players club, you had to work so much time in the players club. You were a slot attendant. You were in the count team. We put them valet parking all the way through, hotel, making up rooms, reservations. And so as they're learning, they also were challenged to go back and get some college, you know, at least get an AA instead of just having a high school, which was the minimum requirement. And at the end of the two-year program, what was done is that we gave them a project. The last 6 months of that 2 years, we gave them a project. And one of the challenges at that property is that, you know, was the cost of dry cleaning, the bedding, the uniforms for the employees, etc. And so we put them in charge to go out and find a dry cleaning plant about 30 miles away. And this is real live information, real deal, not just make up a number and this is what you're working with. So they had to work with the realtor. They had to kind of go through this whole series of, you know, the instead of the general manager going out and looking for buying a dry cleaning plant, they had to learn it. They had to understand what they were doing. And at the end of the 6 months, they had to do a presentation in front of all of the executive directors. And there was 17 of us at that property with the COO. And they had to sell us on that dry cleaning plant and what it was going to save us. And it was just, it was a great program. And all of those six candidates that I just said that first go around, all of them today are in senior management to director positions at that property. So it worked really well, that mentorship.
That's fantastic, Bruce. Hey, you know, it's certainly been a pleasure. You know, I appreciate that. One final question, if you don't mind, Tino.
Yeah, go ahead.
You know, after 44 years, you know, Bruce, and hoping for, you know, that next 8 to 10, what do you want people, or how would you like to leave your legacy on the industry and to be known for after your time in the business?
Well, that's another great question, Michael. Wow. You know, I don't think I ever thought about that, but, I'll see if I can answer that. You know, I've always been a straight shooter, you know, made a few mistakes in my career, and, you know, you learn from that. But I believe that, you know, being a fair manager, you know, being transparent, you know, being a real person, I want to leave, you know, my legacy is I just want to want people to think good of, you know, what I've done and working with them and helping them as well. I believe in helping that next level of management moving up, and it's nice to see that when you can look back and, you know, you have some. I've had many people walk up and say, Bruce, boy, wasn't for you. You know, I was going to get out of the business, but you changed my mind, and now look what I'm doing. I'm a director or I'm a manager, and never thought that was possible. So it's teaching people the business and not, you know, not holding back everything you know. I think that's really key to success is knowledge, is teaching, you know, the you know, your team under you that want to learn and is what you know. The old days, people were afraid, and when I first came up, they were afraid to teach everything because they were afraid for their jobs that you were going to take it. I've never believed in that. I've always, you know, believed in teaching and training and moving forward. So if that makes sense, that's really what I want to leave as my legacy is, you know, being a good guy in the business.
Well said, Bruce. I wish you, you know, continued luck this year. So thank you for your time,
Thanks,
I hope you guys have a great rest of the show.
Okay, thank you very much, Michael.
Thanks, Aloha. Mike. Appreciate it.
Yeah, very talented.
Tino Magnetta, do you have a question for Bruce?
Yeah, hi, Tino. This is Bobby in Las Vegas.
Is it Bobby?
Good. How are you, buddy?
Bobby. Yeah, I'm doing great.
Oh, sorry. How you doing? Sorry.
It's okay. So Bruce, obviously you've had a pretty amazing career in the sense that you've been corporate and tribal and at sea in California and Kansas and you've kind of seen it all.
Yeah.
Along the way, obviously you, with your experience as a GM and booking entertainment. And I'm curious what it sounded like your supper club events were tremendous. And I'm curious what the best and the worst you've seen in the investment in entertainment and promotion.
Oh, gosh. I have a great list. Wow, I've seen, you know, really funny is, you know, a few years back, I, you know, I booked one of the old, I'll just say Mr. Bennett at a casino, and a lot of our, you know, a lot of people, you know, in the senior management thought that, oh, over the hill, you know, out of date, it's not the brand. And of course, you know, it, that was one of the, you know, I got an apology from an agency that was totally against me bringing that entertainer to the property because it was expensive, but we sold out and, you know, that was one of the probably rewarding decisions that I made because everybody doubted my you know, choice of entertainer, and it ended up being one of the most successful. And then there's a, you know, the new type of, you know, when I say new type of music, you know, I definitely, I've resisted in my career of hiring any type of hip hop artist. It just brings a lot of, you know, the return on investment's not there. It just brings a different element. I know that sounds so old school, and, you know, maybe I am. I'm guilty of that, but I made some very good decisions on entertainment and bookings, and so I'd say some of the worst is probably in that genre of type of entertainment or entertainers, and I hope that doesn't offend anybody that's young out there, because now I'm really showing my age.
I think you're just being honest. It's okay.
Yeah, probably too honest.
Well, I love the Buddy Hackett stories, and I'm trying to picture you in a banana suit. I can't quite get there, but it sounded like...
Oh, yeah, I've been in a great suit to a Santa Claus to, you know, you name it, I've done it. And, you know, it was really hard for me to do that because it's, you know, it's really getting out of the box, doing something uncomfortable. But once you've done it and you see the reaction of the guest and they really, really enjoyed it, they had fun laughing at you, and then you just laugh at yourself. And I think that's that was the best takeaway from any of those type of supper clubs that I created. And I remember telling Dennis Conrad with Raving about the supper clubs, and, you know, we kind of, you know, went over a few things, and then Dennis got to experience one of my supper clubs, kind of a smaller version of it, and I had him dress up in a lobster suit, because I was a lobster one time, emceeing in the main showroom with big entertainment in front of 800 guests, and I had Steve Brown, his partner as well, dressed up in my old banana suit, and I was dressed up in a chicken suit, and we did a skit out on the stage in front of the guest and the a raving party, and it was one of the best events that he's ever seen. So he understood that connection and what I was doing after that.
Well, thanks so much for your time answering my question.
You bet. Thank you very much.
Great guy. Bruce, thanks so much for being on the show. It was wonderful. Really, really enjoyed talking to you. And hopefully we'll have you on again soon.
Thank you so much, Tino. I really enjoyed it, and I really enjoy listening to all of the GMs and casino executives you've had on your program. I'm a big fan of GT Radio, so I'll be listening, and I'd be glad to come back one day. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Have a great night.
Thank you, sir. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Great show. February 3rd, we have Thomas Julian, very good friend of mine. Remember, everybody's got a story to tell. You just have to have time to listen. See you in 2 weeks. Take care. Bye-bye.